Tidbit.
Tim Hortons has those.
Huh?
Tim Hortons has tidbits, right?
Timbits,
okay. Little round donuts. And we decided to construct a building to commemorate the name of the famous poet, the late Subramanya Bharati, and unveil his portrait on the 12th October 1947 at Ittayapuram in Tirunelveli district. You know, Harry was doing a lot of research on him. He's a big Harry is a big fan of this poet.
Oh.
You know, and he visited Bhagavan. You know, according to Harry, he got some research that he had visited Bhagavan. Rajaji was to declare the building open, and Ramaswami Reddiar was to unveil the portrait of the poet, Bharati. So he started a new style of writing poetry in Tamil Nadu, which everyone follows since then. And it's quite different than the classical style that Bhagavan used to write in.
In terms of meters?
I think the composition is more understandable. You don't have to study the classical style format and language to be able to read it. Rajaji was to declare the building open, and Ramaswami Reddiar was to unveil the portrait of the poet Bharati. For the last 5 or 6 days, Rajagopala Iyer and Krishna Swami have been collecting cuttings of the photos of Bharati, and the buildings that have been appearing in the buildings that have been appearing in the daily papers. They were busy pasting them onto a cardboard with the photo of the building below that of Bharati. This is like the school projects for kids, you know. They get a big piece of cardboard and they paste the pictures of everything, isn't it? Bhagavan was helping them with his advice in all respects. This job was completed on the 11th October and they both showed it to Bhagavan. Bhagavan said smilingly, "Well, what have you to do now is to cover the top and bottom of the cardboard with 2 pieces of cloth fashioned like a curtain with strings attached, etc. Let Rajagopala Iyer play the role of Rajagopalachari, the Governor General, and Krishna Swami Reddiar, the role of Ramaswami Reddiar. Just when the function at Ittayapuram takes place, both of you draw the curtains on these photos so that the function will be duplicated here simultaneously." It's like a children's game, you know.
Right.
One day in 1947, from 2:30 in the afternoon to about 4 o'clock, Bhagavan was explaining something to a devotee who had come from the north. The attendants were standing before him with Bhagavan's walking stick and kamandalam, indicating that it was getting late for Bhagavan's evening walk. Massaging his leg, Bhagavan said, Wait. Rama Bhakta, Hanuman's father, the wind god, is holding onto my legs firmly. He is not an ordinary person. He will not lose hold in a hurry. He will do it leisurely. Wait a little." Then Bhagavan rubbed a little oil on his kneecaps and got up. Some of those present who couldn't understand the way Bhagavan punned on the stiff joints, which were supposed to be due to the wind, laughed at his jocular remarks. As soon as Bhagavan returned to the hall and sat on the couch, one of the devotees put some incense into the stove nearby. The fumes were a little too intense, and as they spread around Bhagavan's face, he felt almost suffocated. "Shall we open the window?" suggested a devotee. Bhagavan said, "Let it be. Leave it alone. In the temples, we burn the incense and fan fumes towards the deity so that the idol is completely enveloped in the fumes. Your idea in burning the incense here also to see, is to see that the Swami should enjoy the fumes. Moreover, they are spreading out of their own accord. Why are you now trying to drive the fumes away? Just as Bhagavan was saying this, the devotee fanned the embers and the stove with his hand. Suddenly the whole thing burst into flame. We were afraid that the heat of the flame might affect Bhagavan and began to feel anxious. But Bhagavan said with a smile, "Yes, now it is all right. The incense has been burnt and the lights have been waved. The process of puja is now complete." Then Bhagavan resumed silence. 6 February 1950, the greatness of Chiles. In the last week of April 1947, Bharati, a Telugu monthly journal, was received in the ashram. It contained an article on the Chiles of Palnad, a part of Guntur district, Andhra Pradesh. In it, it was stated that Chiles would cure congestion of the chest due to phlegm, help digestion, and act as a good tonic for the body. The author also said that chilies have a number of beneficial effects to the body and stimulate the brain, and are useful in the preparation of many medicines. He also quoted authorities in support of his theory. Bhagavan asked me to read out the article, called the ashram doctors and said smilingly, "Look here, you want me to cut down on chilies. The efficacy of chilies has been described in an article in the Bharati. Nagama is going to read it. Listen carefully. It prevents phlegm and acts as a good tonic. Many are the beneficial effects of chilies." So saying, Bhagavan asked Venkataratnam to preserve that issue of Bharati. Venkataratnam and I were wondering why Bhagavan wanted us to preserve this particular copy. 10 days later, Janaki Amal, wife of the retired surgeon Ganapati Iyer, now Janaki Mata, came with some other ladies to stay in the ashram for a few weeks, or a few days. One afternoon, around 3 o'clock, addressing Bhagavan, she said, "Bhagavan, you are looking very weak. You must completely cut out chilies and take only nutritious food. Chilies dry up the system," and quoted a number of examples in support of her statement. She went on in the same strain, even though someone there remarked that chilies had never done any harm to Bhagavan. Again, someone nearby tried to interrupt her. Then Bhagavan remarked, "Don't be impatient. She is a wife of a surgeon. While he prescribes the medicine, she prescribes the patient's the diet. What can you know about such things?" He then turned toward her and said, "You say chilies are not good, but there is a long article in the Bharati extolling the good qualities of chilies. Whose advice am I to follow?" "Wait a minute. They will read the article to you, and you can yourself understand all about it. According to you, chilies weaken the body? But according to the article, the Reddis of Palnad are strong and sturdy because they eat plenty of chilies. Listen to the details." So saying, Bhagavan asked Venkataratnam to get the journal and read it out the article. The lady was not able to say anything more. Brahma Nirvana. The small tumor which showed itself on the left upper arm of Bhagavan in November 1948 began growing from day to day, so that on the 1st of February 1949 it became as big as a marble. The doctor in charge of the ashram hospital, Dr. Shankar Rao, and a retired surgeon, Dr. Srinivasa Rao, pointed it out to Bhagavan and offered to remove it by a small surgical operation. Bhagavan, however, did not agree to it. As it continued to grow rapidly, the doctors got perturbed and somehow prevailed upon Bhagavan to agree to its removal. Accordingly, the first operation was performed on the morning of the 9th February 1949. All the devotees wanted the bandage to be covered so as to not be visible to outsiders, but then was there an upper cloth to cover it? Was there a shirt to wear? The only thing Bhagavan had was a white cloth, half a yard wide and three-fourths of a yard long. He tied it around his neck so as to conceal the bandage. Still, the bandage was visible through the gaps. When some people who had the courage to ask him what the matter was, Bhagavan used to reply with a laugh that he had worn a bracelet on the arm, or that a lingam had been born there, or that it was Swayambhu lingam. Swayambhu lingam is a lingam which springs or arises from the ground by itself. It is associated with Lord Shiva. They say the lingam in the Arunachala temple is a Swayambhu lingam.
Right. That one we have is a special lingam of some kind. The man who brought it said.
Yeah, but not the Swayambhu. It comes from some river bank, you know. Sometime later, the bandage was removed. People said that the wound was healing up. Somehow, everyone forgot about it during the bustle of the Kumbhabhishekam, which took place on the 17th of March, 1949. As soon as the festivities were over, all people came to know that the tumor had shown itself again. Some suggested treatment with the green leaves and milk of a fig tree. Others brought a medicated plaster and put it on it. On the 27th of March, 1949, Radhavacharya and other doctors who came from Madras said that none of those remedies would do and that the tumor must be operated upon again. They left after deciding that the second operation should be performed and promised to come back on April 3rd, 1949. I was somehow frightened and in a prayerful attitude and treated Bhagavan saying, why all these operations? Why do you not cure yourself by getting some medicine prescribed by yourself and using it? The same as you did when you had jaundice. Bhagavan replied, they are all reputed doctors. Let their treatment be carried out. When I said that they had already performed an operation, which had been found unsuccessful, and inquired why Bhagavan should not have his own treatment, Bhagavan said, let it go this time. If it appears again, we will see about it. On the morning of April 3rd, 1949, while we were discussing about the details of the operation in the presence of Bhagavan, the doctors came. Seeing them, Bhagavan said, look, the doctors have come, and began arranging his legs preparatory to getting up. Bhagavan was demonstrating the practical application of his upadesha. Whatever is to happen will happen, and whatever is not to happen will not happen. Then Bhagavan said with a firm voice, yes, that which is to happen will not stop, even if we say no. So saying, he got down from the couch and went into the hospital. Till about the middle of May 1949, everything went on fairly satisfactorily. But afterwards, there was an all-around anxiety and worry because when the stitches were removed, blood began oozing from the place where the operation had been performed. The tumor had not healed and was clearly exhibiting its malignancy. As it was suggested that it would do good to expose the tumor to the sun's rays in June 1949, the doctors used to seek Bhagavan behind the Goshala cowshed. Open the bandage, wash the wound, and keep it exposed for some time to the sun's rays. On such occasions, devotees who expressed their fear and anxiety were told to Bhagavan, see how nice it is. It is like a precious ruby. It has become an ornament to my arm. See how red it is. It is glowing brilliantly with the sun, and with the sun's rays falling on it. Just look at it. And when they saw blood oozing out and remarked about it with grief, he used to say, "Why worry? Let the blood flow out. It is a ruby, you see, like the Swamanta Kamani," footnote, "that is a kind of valuable gem said to yield daily 8 loads of gold and also protect the wearer from all kinds of danger and calamity. This is also producing gold every day. The only difference is, in that case, the gold that was produced was yellow. Well, in this case, it is red. See how much it's oozing out. And if any devotee prayed to him to heal himself, he used to say, 'What have I to do with this? Or what can I do?'" On the 5th of July, 1949, an old woman from Valluvai, a village nearby, and a reputed Ayurvedic doctor, an old man, started applying the juice of some green leaves and bandaging the wound. Before he began the treatment, he saw the wound in all its malignancy and remarked with intense grief, "Oh, Bhagavan, how serious this is. Swami, this is cancer. This should not be touched at all. Why did you allow it to be operated on? If I had known it in the beginning, I would have dressed it with green leaves containing medicinal properties and cured it. It is too late now, Swami." When Bhagavan was returning to the hall after leaving the hospital on the 1st of July, 1949, his body began to shake and his legs began to falter. He had fever. He somehow reached the hall and squatted on the couch. "Wow, we were all alarmed and were anxiously looking at him. Shantama could not contain herself, and being elderly and very old devotee, took the liberty of addressing Bhagavan and said, 'Oh, the body.' No sooner has he said this than Bhagavan remarked, 'Oh, the body. Why? What has happened? It is shaking. What if it shakes?' So saying, he suppressed the shivering and, looking at his attendants, said with a laugh, 'That is Nataraja's dance. Why should you be afraid? If every day the body is giving you darshan in its static form, today it is giving you in a dance pose. Why all this anxiety?'" So saying, he sat there in a dignified silence. The Veda Parayana was then done. On the 7th of August, 1949, Dr. Guruswami Mudaliar was here personally to observe the third operation. I had already written to you that it was from that date that questions and answers in Bhagavan's presence had become rare. After the final operation was performed on the 19th of December, 1949, Bhagavan did not come into either the new hall or the old hall. He confined himself to the small room opposite the big hall. After homeopathic treatment was tried, Ayurvedic treatment began. The Muse, a famous Ayurvedic doctor from Kerala, who was treating Bhagavan, felt discouraged, and on the 3rd of March, 1950, he wrote a stotram in praise of Bhagavan and arranged for its parayana along with Vishnu's Sahasranam every day. Some devotees performed Surya Namaskar, and some began doing Mrityunjaya Japa, prayer to Lord Shiva, the conqueror of death. Just as he had handed over his body to the doctors to do whatever they liked with it, saying, "Yes, yes," he was accepting the offerings of those devotees in the shape of tirtha, sacred water, and prasadams, offerings of food, to the gods. After the Mrityunjaya Japa was over, the people concerned asked him if they could proceed with the Mrityunjaya Homa. He nodded in assent, and as soon as they left, turned towards Venkataratnam said, extinction of ego and abidance in self is the Mrityunjaya Homa. In Devikulottaram, verse 16 and 17, it is stated that one should not get immersed in mantrams, homams, and such things. Also, in Sarvajnanottaram, verse 35, it is said that abidance in the self itself is the mantra, the devata, the diksha, the tapas, the homam, and the dhyana. About the same time, a lady devotee had chandi homam performed. Another lady lighted holy candles to appease Sani, Saturn. Some had abhisheka and other pujas performed in the Arunachalashwara temple. On the 17th of March, 1950, Bhagavan had some vomitings with consequent discomfort and so did not take any food subsequently. Hearing that, his sister, Alamelu, went to him and said, "Oh, Bhagavan, it seems you have not taken anything at all. Today's payasam is very tasteful. You have not taken even a drop of it." Bhagavan, however, sent her away with some words of comfort. From the time the cancer showed itself, I always used to pray to Bhagavan whenever I could manage to see him, "Please get yourself cured of this ailment and remain in this world for our sake." Bhagavan used to console me with some comforting words or other. When the third and the fourth operations were performed, and I expressed my fear and anxiety, he used to say that there was no need for worry, and there was nothing really seriously wrong. Hence, however serious the ailment was, and however much other people felt anxious and discouraged, I used to think that Bhagavan would hint to me if there was anything imminent. That egoism enveloped my whole being and blinded me to the grim realities of the situation. I was therefore confident that he would get cured ultimately. On the 19th of March 1950 was a lunar New Year's Day. From the time I had come here, it had been usual for me to offer to Bhagavan for his personal wear a kadar towel and kopinam, and arrange for bhiksha in the ashram that day. As I did not like to give it up this year, I took with me a towel and a kopinam in the evening at about 7 o'clock on the 18th of March, 1950, went into the small room accompanied by our postmaster, Raja Iyer. Bhagavan stared at me. I quietly placed the clothes on the table and said the next day was the Ugadi, New Year's Day. Bhagavan started at that and said, "Is the Ugadi come? Is the Vikruti, the name of the New Year, come?" There was something strange and perplexing in that voice, and I cannot explain why, but it seemed to forebode something disastrous, and it was to me heart-rending. The two attendants stood aghast. I too could say nothing, and so mumbled, "I felt it would be inauspicious if I gave up my usual practice." Bhagavan said, "Oh, what is there in that?" And looking at one of the attendants by name, Anjanelu, who was by his side, said, "Keep those clothes carefully. Nagama has brought them. Tomorrow is Ugadi, it seems." So saying, in a very gentle manner, he gave us leave to go. As the attendants were removing the clothes, I went near the couch and asked Bhagavan, "How is the arm?" Bhagavan said, "What shall I say how it is?" I told Bhagavan, "You must somehow cure yourself." Bhagavan replied, "I cannot say anything now." I pleaded with you with great humility, "How could you say that, Bhagavan?" Perhaps he felt that my hopes would not go unless he told me the bare truth. And so looking at me with compassion, he said, "Cure? What cure?" I said, "Will it not be cured?" Bhagavan replied, cure? What cure? How could there be any cure now? The previous assurance that there was nothing to worry about and nothing would happen, all of them disappeared at that moment. And when I heard those words, my whole body shook with fear. My eyes filled with tears and my voice got choked. I wanted to ask about our fate for the future and was so trying to gather some composure of mind and open my lips with someone when someone from the office came in hurriedly on some urgent work. I was startled by the noise and came out without asking what I wanted to ask and slowly retraced my steps to my hut. The next morning, I thought of approaching Bhagwan again to ask for his final message, but could not get an opportunity. The resonant voice of Bhagwan that said, "Is the Ugadi come?" appeared to me to say, "All is over." With that Ugadi, the great privilege I had all these years of hearing and enjoying the nectar of Bhagwan's voice ended. On the evening of 14th April 1950, I went at 6:30 and stood in the queue arranged for an orderly darshan of Bhagwan. And when I got up to the raised mound opposite the door of the room where Bhagwan was sitting and stood there for a while with my sight concentrated on him and prayed to him mentally, "Oh Prabhu, won't you for once radiate on me your compassionate look?" Bhagwan's eyes slowly began to open. And from those eyes, a mild and compassionate look came on me. That was the last time I had the great fortune of his compassionate look. At 8:47 that night, Sri Ramana, the embodiment of light and enlightenment, left his mortal koya. When the mortal body of Gurudev, who was at once my mother, father, guru, and God, and who has protected me all these years, ceased to be the abode of that great soul, I remained still as a statue, drowned in inexpressible grief and sorrow. The writing of these letters began on the 21st of November 1945 and continued uninterrupted all these days through the grace of Bhagavan. And with the end of the avatar of Bhagavan, I'm giving up the writing of these letters, Om Tat Sat. So, now reflections of Sri Ramanasana. Recollections of Sri Ramanasana. That was a separate book, but they put it in here.
Yeah.
Forward to the letters from and recollections of Sri Ramanasana. When the tapas of great devotees reaches a sufficiently ripe stage, they are reborn in this world by God's grace. When their allotted work is over, they go back. To this category belong Kumaraswami, Kumari Labhata, Jnana Sambandar, and Sri Ramana Maharshi. There is no one in this century who has taught Advaita in such an easily understandable manner by the 10-lettered mantra Nive Vara Vo Thelu Sukho. Find out who you are. Sri Nagama Garu obtained shelter at the lotus feet of this eminent guru, stayed at the ashram a long time, enjoying great bliss, noted down every little incident that happened there, and gave to the public in an easily understandable manner the great truth of Maharshi expounded from time to time. Readers have seen this through her books, letters, and life. Such incidents as were omitted while writing these two books are now related in this Smrutulu. May Jignasus read them and experience immense joy. The Ramakrishna Mutt, Raja Mundri, East Godavari District, on the 12th of June 1978. Swami Nirvikalpananda. Preface to the letters from and recollections of Sri Ramanasama. Note, The 31 letters previously published under this title have been incorporated into the preceding letters. The 28 recollections follow this preface. Several devotees express their desire to hear interesting sayings and nectar-like utterances of Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharshi. One of them is my elder brother, Sri D.S. Sastri. In February 1976, I had to undergo a surgical operation for cancer at Madras. My brother, his daughter, Vasanta, and her husband, Ramakrishna, looked after me and served me with love and affection. After the surgery and during the subsequent cobalt treatment, my brother used to sit in a chair by my side and read the Bhagavad Gita in the mornings and the Bhagavatam in the evenings. On such occasions, I related several incidents that happened in Bhagavan's presence, which came to my mind readily. He noted down all such incidents, which had not already appeared in the letters from Ramanashramam, or in my life at Sri Ramanashramam, though later he urged me to write them down in the form of a book. I did not have the energy or the enthusiasm to do so at the time. On the 10th of May 1976, I went to Bangalore for convalescing at the invitation of my sister's son, G.R. Sharma, and his wife, Nirmala. It was during that time Ganeshan of Sri Ramanashramam wrote to me saying that I should carefully recollect and write down in a narrative form all my reminiscences relating to Bhagavan so that in due course the ashram could publish them. Even so, I did not have the required urge or strength to sit down and write, and so replied that I would take up the work when I got sufficient strength to go over to the ashram for a long stay. On the 12th of October 1976, my sister's daughter, Prafulla, and her husband, Sri V. Avadhani, invited me to Bombay for a change. While there, P.V. Somasundaram, the secretary of the local Ramana Kendram, arranged a meeting of the devotees on the 21st of October 1976 and asked me to speak. When I told him that I was not accustomed to public speaking, he said I could write down what I wished to say, and that he would arrange with my nephew to translate the same into English and read it out at the meeting. I had therefore no alternative but to agree to his request. On the 18th of November 1976, I sat under the Ashwatha tree in the park outside the bank house at Nariman Point, Bombay, where my nephew resided, and began writing these reminiscences. I felt it was a call of Bhagavan, and I thought I should not ignore it any longer. That was how I came to write again. For 4 years ago, I wrote my life at Sri Ramanashramam, and because of the shortness of the time, it is just possible some repetitions have crept into these writings through oversight. I request readers to bear with me in this regard. Sri Nagama, Sri Ramanashramam, Tiruvannamalai, January 1st, 1978. Come, let us go. In the biography of Bhagavan, Ramana Maharshi and the Path of Self-Knowledge, it is mentioned how when Bhagavan was in the Virupaksha cave, his mother came there on one or two occasions, and how when, in 1912, she stayed for about 10 days, she fell ill. It was on that occasion Bhagavan composed 4 verses appealing to Lord Arunachala, which is perhaps the only instance known of any prayer of his to influence the course of events. The fever subsided, and she returned to her family in Manamandurai in 1916 as a result of some calamities in the family. She got disgusted with life and came to Arunachala again, this time with the intention of staying with Bhagavan till the end of her life. As she was doubtful about her being permitted to stay with him in the Virupaksha cave, She went first to Achama's house for a temporary stay and visited Bhagavan frequently along with Achama and other lady devotees. After a while, she made known her desire to remain in the cave permanently with him, Bhagavan. Bhagavan just listened to her, but did not say anything. One of the attendants who was looking after the affairs of the ashram at the time protested, as he felt that Bhagavan might not take the idea, might not like the idea, and might go away from the place never to return. That was because of his well-known attitude towards his relatives, including his mother. Moreover, it was felt that if an exception was made in the case of the mother, other women like Achama and Mudaliarpati might likewise seek an exception. Hence, all the attendants in one voice said that ladies should not be allowed to stay in the cave under any circumstances. When their objections were made known, Achama and other ladies gave an assurance, saying, "We will never ask for permission to stay in the ashram. It is enough if the mother alone is allowed to stay. She has become too old. She cannot climb up the hill every day. And where else can she go at this old age? Bhagavan alone should look after her hereafter." As no one could guess what exactly was in Bhagavan's mind, and afraid of suggesting any change to the existing traditions of the ashram, they persisted in refusing to accede to mother's request. She therefore got up in great anguish to leave the ashram. Seeing that, Bhagavan, deeply moved, also got up, and taking hold of her hand, said, "Come, let us go. If not here, we can stay somewhere else. Come." At this, the residents of the ashram fell at his feet, and as they were afraid that he might have leave them altogether, begged him to stay, saying, "Please, do not go anywhere. Pray, do stay here itself, along with mother." From then on, mother stayed with Bhagavan. With the passage of time, because of latent vasanas, mother would say it would be better if they had this article or that, and Bhagavan would admonish her, quietly saying, "Mother, if you want bodily comfort, go to the other son. If you want mental comfort, you stay here." And she opted for the latter, as a matter of course. She adjusted herself to the hard life of the ashram and never thought of going elsewhere under any circumstances. She remained there alone till the very end. And Bhagavan, with his divine grace, gave her moksha, thus fulfilling the Upanishadic junction, Matru Devo Bhavaha. When I heard about this incident from Kunjaswami, I asked him why it was not mentioned in Bhagavan's biography. He said, "It is a fact that it is not mentioned. I asked Bhagavan in the same manner as you have asked me, and he said, why? I did not like to make public a matter where there was some difference of opinion amongst the members of the ashram. When I suggested that there might be many such matters which are not known to the public, Bhagavan said, yes, there are very many matters not known to others. What can one do? I was naturally interested in giving publicity to important matters of this nature, and so one day mentioned it to Shanta Amma and Subbalakshmi Amma, two lady devotees working in the kitchen. They related to me another incident, which is as follows. After Bhagavan settled down in Skanda Ashram, along with his mother, Chinnaswami, the younger brother of Bhagavan, came to Arunachala, took sannyasa, and began living by begging food from the public. After some time, he came to stay with Bhagavan, along with the other attendants. It will be remembered, Bhagavan stayed in Skanda Ashram till the death of his mother. Knowing that her end was near, and before losing consciousness, she called Bhagavan to her side and, placing Chinnaswami's hand in his, said, "Look, my dear, this boy does not know what is right and what is wrong. Don't let him go away from you. Keep a watchful eye on him. This is my last wish." So saying, she entrusted her third son to the care of Bhagavan. In accordance with her wishes, Bhagavan always kept a watchful eye on him. Whenever there were any lapses on the part of Sinaswami, who later became the Sarvadhikari, Bhagavan tactfully solved the problems arising therefrom. Sinaswami, too, had the greatest devotion and highest regard for Bhagavan. This was very much in evidence when Sinaswami was looking after the administration of the ashram as its Sarvadhikari. If he found fault with anybody, and the devotee, stricken with grief, complained to Bhagavan, Bhagavan would look at him, on him with compassion, and in his inimitable way, relate some amusing stories to soothe his feelings. If in spite of that, the devotee were to persist in his complaint, Bhagavan would console him by saying, who knows what tales have been carried to the Sarvadhikari. As regards giving mukti to his mother, as stated above, one incident deserves special mention. When Panayana Swami, an early disciple, was in the last throes of death, Bhagavan thought of giving him mukti and so placed his hand on the heart and the head, but the strength of his vasanas was so intense they could not get dissolved, and so after some time he removed his hands and gave up the effort ultimately. In the case of the mother, some years later, Bhagavan similarly placed his hands on the heart and the head, and as the vasanas gradually subsided, he continued to keep his hand thus until life was completely extinct. Thus his efforts giving mukti to mother succeeded. In the case of Lakshmi, the cow, Bhagavan often told us that all the past incidents in life welled up in the same manner in the case of the mother, but they subsided ultimately, which did not happen in the case of Palanaswami. When I pointed out that Bhagavan was not with Lakshmi till she breathed her last, as in the case of mother, he said, oh, that. What desires did Lakshmi have after all? Only if there are desires in plenty, they will remain till the end. So what Bhagavan wanted us to understand was that Lakshmi, the cow, being an animal, had no vasanas like us human beings. It was only in the case of these three living beings that Bhagavan was known to have extended his grace during the last moments of their lives.